This is Family Court Vision,
the podcast where a woman and her son discuss all things basketball.
On today's episode, we have MNBA superlatives, so many coaches fired, WNBA superstars like Lloyd and Ogunbowale. We review the movie Once Brothers, which is full of history and heartbreak. And then, what would we do if we were commish for the day? How would Jack, our resident rule follower, change the rules? Will it lead to more excitement or total chaos?
Stay tuned for that. Long episode, buckle in, but it's all worth it, I promise you. Let's boogie.
Welcome to episode 24 of Family Court Vision. It is 6:40 on Wednesday, June 9th. How are you, Jack? What's new?
Nothing much.
Nothing? No family news from your family this week?
No. What about you?
Nah, nothing new. Go ahead, Jack. Tell everybody.
We are, of course, joking. Yesterday was a very exciting day for our family. My older sister, Brielle, just got engaged. Pew, 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 pew,
pew. Right? Good job with the sound effects. Nice.
Yeah.
So we're very excited.
Yeah. Very exciting day.
She is on vacation right now. And it was in typical Love and Drug family fashion, a tech nightmare trying to get us all together on the same system FaceTime at the same time to hear this news from her. So she said, who's ready for FaceTime? And like three of us were like, me, and we got on, and then the other one didn't respond because he was in the shower. And then when he got out, we waited and waited and waited, and then she had to go into something she had tickets for, and then when he got out, and then he had to go to work, it was a whole thing. So, but eventually we were all in the one place at the one time, and she was able to share her happy news.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. So we're very excited. Her fiance, so weird Ooh. To say, her fiance Ooh. Sam was already part of the family, but we're, you know, now in the process of making that official. So very exciting. He's a great guy, and we're very excited for that, and very happy for the two of them.
Yes, very happy. I also met another new family member over the weekend.
New family member?
Mm-hmm. Giacomo.
Giacomo.
Uh-huh.
Is a new family member. Oh, yep. No, I see where this is going. Okay, yeah. Yeah, who is that?
Giacomo is your aunt and uncle and cousin's new dog.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So they rescued a dog, and I think an 8-year-old dog. So he came with the name Giacomo.
Uh-huh.
And he is a big dog.
Is he?
They said he's big. And I looked at the pictures. I'm like, yeah, he looks like medium-ish big, whatever. And then in person, he's a big dog. He's like and he's got like long legs. So he looks kind of like a deer.
Ah, uh-huh.
He was kind of in an unfortunate situation, not anything abusive or anything, but an unfortunate home situation, and had a lot of stress and is not eating, and now is starting to, seems very comfortable in their home, but he's a little skinny, and his legs are skinny, but he's sweet. He's so sweet.
That's good. That's sort of a long name. Do they have, like, are they shortening that?
Nope, his name's Giacomo.
Because
I mean, he's 8 years old already. So
no. But I just mean like I don't call then him. Like, you want him to be Jacques? Jack. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like that name is already kind of taken in the family. So.
So you want the dog to be named Jack? I see.
Or you know, Camo. They could do it that way instead.
Catchy. It's catchy. They need to. He was in a home, and then he was in like a foster home, and at the foster home, he kind of got checked over by a vet, but they need to take him to their real vet, and he will not get in the car. I think that because he was, you know, he's moved from home to home to home for a little while. So I think he thinks like, no, I'm not going anywhere else. And he's so big, they can't get him in.
Uh-huh.
He's very sweet.
That's good. I'm excited to meet him.
Yeah.
So two very exciting family pieces of news this week. That's right. Anything else you want to bring up?
I don't think
so. Those seem like the highlights, I would guess.
I mean, on Sunday, those honors that they hold at the Kennedy Center were on.
Yes. Those Kennedy Center honors. I it's a recall. I'm not.
That's for our loyal listeners.
Yeah, they'll know. They'll know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You they were on there was new honors on, or it was a rerun? I thought they usually when you said it a couple weeks ago, you were like, they happen in December. Don't they happen in December? Mm-hmm. Or they couldn't. So this is,
And it was they did a very good job with the social distancing. They did a lot of the musical numbers outside and different places around the campus of the Kennedy Center. And they had, you know, like the presenters were kind of in the hallway with lots of pictures of the honorees, and it was really nice. It was very nice. And Dick Van Dyke was one of the honorees, and you know, he's just a joy, and to watch his body of work. I can't believe he's in his 90s. He's never gotten one of these awards before.
Yeah.
First of all,
that seems too late to me, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Talk about giving people their flowers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's another recall for our loyal listeners.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's right. And Debbie Allen, who we talked about recently because she was in The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. Also fun because she's a dancer.
Very nice.
That's all I got.
All right.
Oh no, I went to book group last night, but okay, now that's all I got.
Okay.
I have a question for both of you that has nothing to do with basketball, and it has nothing to do with anything, but it's a question I've been asking a lot of people recently. And so I want to get your take. Do you think that cake or cupcakes are better?
Almost always. Cupcakes.
In my mind, the parameters I'm setting for this are that both of them are well made and delicious. So if both of them are well made and delicious, I go for cake.
Okay.
I think oftentimes cupcakes are a little tastier because cake sometimes is dry because it's big and people don't know how to make it. But like within the parameters of both of them are delicious, I would go for cake because there's layers. You might have cannoli cream in the middle, and then you could have like a chocolate ganache on the outside, lots of different flavors.
This is something too that I feel, and I might be, there might be the complete opposite viewpoint, but if I was to go up to get seconds, I feel like I'm less judged in getting a second cupcake than a second piece of cake. Mm. That's a big part of it for me,
is the
people around me judging me. So
I'm in my 50s, so I'm beyond caring what people judge me for. So, you know, I'll go back a few times. What about you, Aaron? What do you prefer?
I agree with Jack. I think that cupcakes are usually better.
Yes.
What is each of your favorite type of cupcake? Like, do you like chocolate or vanilla? Do you like frosting?
I usually like a combo. So like vanilla cupcake, chocolate frosting, or chocolate cupcake, vanilla frosting.
I like agree. I'm kind of that way too.
Yeah.
And you know, you can make a rainbow cake, but you can't really make a rainbow cupcake. So, you know, rainbow cakes are pretty delicious.
I guess that's true.
Knowing you, Mom, I would believe in your ability to do that, to figure out a way to do that. So
yeah. All right. Well, thank you. That's very nice.
It is Pride Month, so maybe you should try to figure that out.
I should. I did make a rainbow cake last year for Pride Month, so maybe I'll do it again.
All right, cool. So let's get into our first segment of the day, which is basketball news of the week. We had some more of those awards announced this week. The first one was that Coach Tom Thibodeau of the New York Knicks won Coach of the Year. I believe Monty Williams of the Suns won like the coaches poll, like when the coaches vote amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. But the official like press award was given to Coach Tibbs, as they affectionately call him.
So you said Thibodeau.
I believe I have this correct. I could be wrong. But I believe it's Thibodeau, but his nickname is Tibbs. People call him Tibbs for short.
Okay. If you say so.
I recently heard somebody give that exact distinction. Okay. And I trust them, but
it was someone who knows what they're talking about who gave that distinction?
Yes, I think so.
You know, was it like, I don't know, like, I don't even know any, the pandemic has gone on so long, I can't even give you an example of someone you would talk to who wouldn't know anything about basketball.
No, it was on one of my basketball media things I listen to or watch, podcasts or shows and stuff.
24/7.
Right. So I'm pretty sure about that. So okay. Congratulations to him.
Congrats.
And then we had Nikola Jokic win MVP award. Mm-hmm. He's the first Nugget to ever win the MVP award. He's the lowest drafted player ever to win the award.
41st draft pick.
A lot of stuff has been going around the past couple of days. They didn't even announce it on TV. He was drafted during a commercial break on the draft. He was just like at the bottom because nobody expected anything out of him. And now he's the league's MVP. So
yeah. See what some hard work can do for you.
That's right. And he is the most like, I don't want to judge anybody for what they look like, but like, he is just like the least looking like a pro athlete person who is an elite pro athlete. Obviously it's just very, I mean, he's 7 feet tall. So that helps, but like, he's just sort of like a big lumbering white guy, and like, he just, there's nothing athletic about him at all, but he's so skilled, so smart, such a talented player. So
he is also the first Serbian to win that title.
That I didn't know that.
And we will be talking about Serbia a little later in our pod.
Yes we will.
Right now there are 6 active Serbian players in the NBA.
I could not name them. I'm sorry.
I could not either.
Okay.
Several of them have the ch on the end of their name.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Including him, Jokic. So, yeah, congratulations to him.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't think either of us picked him. You picked Giannis, I think, at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And I picked Luka Doncic.
Another
yes, he is Slovenian though. Luka is. Okay. Playoffs, as always, are ongoing. I don't think the Clippers Mavs series was wrapped up last time we talked, so the Clippers came out on top in game 7 there, much to my dismay. But they already, since 4 days ago when we last recorded, they had their first game against the Jazz, which the Jazz won. So they're up 1-0 in the series. Donovan Mitchell was huge in that game with 45 points. Big, really big there. And we'll see how that series plays out. The other series in the West is the Suns versus the Nuggets. Jokic and recently crowned MVP. Suns won the first game, and the second game of that series is tonight. So again, we'll see what happens there. Over in the East, we have the Bucks and the Nets. I don't know how anybody's going to.
So you're upset right now because the Nets are doing well.
They're up 2-0 in like dominant fashion. I just don't. Mm-hmm. I don't see how anybody beats them. I don't like that James Harden got hurt early on in the first game and was out for the second game. Could be out for maybe the rest of the series. Who knows? And they don't like. He's just a luxury to them. They don't need him. It's not a. That's crazy to me that they have an MVP of this league and they don't really even need him. Mm-hmm. They can win games against a really good team in dominant fashion without him. So that's scary.
You know, Kyrie really needs accolades for that.
Yeah.
Because he is like the architect of this group of really good players who are on this team. So yes. I stand by my fandom of Kyrie.
Okay. And that's fine. Kyrie also has been excellent throughout these playoffs, and yes.
Like, you seem disappointed that the Nets are doing so well, but I would like to remind you that you lived the first 22 and a half years of your life in New York.
Uh-huh.
So you shouldn't be rooting against a New York team. It's just not right. You could root against the Yankees in baseball. That's totally fine. But come on.
There's a couple problems with that. One is that...
And they used to be from New Jersey, and you live in New Jersey.
But that's the problem, is that New Yorkers... See, now I'm sort of on the opposite side. But, like, as somebody who considers himself a true New Yorker, not necessarily city, but, like, New York Stater, anything from New Jersey, it's like, nah, that's not us. We don't identify with that. So even though they came and moved to Brooklyn, it's still like, that's not our team. Like, that's wow. separate from us. Also, in hockey, too, like, I root for the Islanders. I don't necessarily root against the Rangers, but, like, they're not my team. That's not my team, you know?
But what if the Rangers were in the playoffs and the Islanders weren't? Would you be, like, disappointed?
I know. That's a bad example because I don't really care about hockey at all, so I don't know. Oh. But that, I'm saying that's a bad example that I gave. Yeah. But yeah. But no. And then it's also, I have rooting interests against Kevin Durant for multiple reasons. I have rooting interests sort of against Kyrie Irving.
Ugh.
I know. Ugh. I do not dislike him for much of the reasons that many in the media and people do not like him. But I have my own things. And I don't like James Harden either. So it's a whole combination of things. And, like, if Kevin Durant wins the title this year and wins Finals MVP, as it's looking like is going to happen, there's going to be all this discussion about, is Kevin Durant a greater player than LeBron? Should he be in the GOAT conversation? He has now three of these titles. And it's like, Kevin Durant is an all-time player. He has been the second best player in the league for a decade now and could potentially become the best player in the league if he wins this championship. But he and LeBron James are on two different levels. But I know that conversation is going to start happening. And so that's not what, that's so something I'm very, like, much not looking forward to.
You're pre-stressing about that.
Yes.
Okay.
I know that's shocking to hear about me.
Yes. Woo. Usually so chill.
Yes. And then the last series is the 76ers and Hawks. Hawks won the first game. Joel Embiid was out for that game. 76ers came back and won the second one. So that series is split 1-1. The Hawks are looking better than I thought. I picked the Knicks to beat them. They already are in the second round and winning games against the Sixers. So good for them. Yes.
Some coach firings.
Coach firings. So we talked about Boston last week, which wasn't a firing. It was actually a promotion. But Steve Clifford is out in Orlando. Terry Stotts is out in Portland. And Nate Bjorkgren is out in Indiana. Mm-hmm. For Orlando and Indiana, it makes sense. They both had disappointing seasons. Orlando kind of gave up halfway through and went full tank mode. They're both looking for kind of fresh starts. Indiana, there was a lot of, like, bad stories coming out about them this year, about the players and the coach not getting along. It was just his first year. Mm-hmm. So that came and went pretty quickly. Terry Stotts had a very successful career with Portland. He was there for many years. They just, as we kind of talked about last week, they just could never get over that hump with Dame Lillard. So I think it was just for them time to change. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that Orlando and Indiana are now both interested in Terry Stotts. Mm-hmm. So he might walk right into another job. Hopefully we will be able to, because those are all four so far coaches who will not be coaching their team next year are white coaches. So hopefully we can add some diversity in the hiring of these vacancies, but we'll see. Anything from you on that?
On that topic? No.
Okay. And then Pat Riley.
Yes. So Pat Riley was on a radio show. And he's involved with the Heat.
Yes, he is the GM, president of basketball operations, whatever they call it with them.
So he was like, you know, LeBron is welcome to come back here. You know, I mean, something about, like, I don't know if the door is wide open for him, but I'll leave the key under the mat if he wants me to. And the NBA was like, you're fined $25,000. You can't recruit players. So he got fined $25,000. And I think when he was saying it, he knew he was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, whatever. So I won't go out to dinner this weekend. I'll just pay that fine. It's fine. Whatever.
And what do you think about that?
I think that's ridiculous. He was talking about it. Yeah. He was talking on it. I mean, I get it, because then anybody could be like, What I was just talking to some radio guy. I didn't recruit anyone, but meanwhile is like planting the seed. Not that, you know, I think LeBron is going to do whatever LeBron wants to do, and Pat Riley talking on a radio show isn't going to do it, but you can't, like, I guess you can't have different standards for who you're going to find for based on who they're talking about. But I do, in my heart, think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I first of all, pretty much disagree with the tampering rule in general in terms of those situations. Because, like, I mean, first of all, in this specific situation, like, tampering is often used as, like, we want to make sure that the smaller markets don't have their players stolen by these big markets. And, like, going from Los Angeles to Miami, like, that's not a small market team is not being hurt in that situation. Mm-hmm. If for some reason his comment about, hey, we'd like to have LeBron James back on our team means anything to LeBron. But I think tampering in general, like, either way, like, really, like a big market team, the owner can say, like, yeah, this is a great player, we'd love to have him someday. Really, that's going to be the deciding factor for that player to go, you know what, I'm leaving Milwaukee and I'm going mm-hmm. to Los Angeles. Like, mm-hmm. that's just mm-hmm. that's just dumb. So,
yeah.
Okay. And then the last thing here for the NBA.
So, apparently Giannis takes a long time to set up for a free throw, and you're only allowed to take 10 seconds. And the Nets have been feeling like he's taking more time than he should be taking, and he's not being called on it. So they set up a free throw clock, countdown clock, on the backboard, counting down from 10. So partially, I mean, the Nets are like, what? We just want the referees to be aware of how long it's taking him. But it's also psyching him out. And also making the Nets fans be like, 10, 9, like, you know, taunting. And he has not made any free throws or very many free throws while this clock has been there. So the NBA is like, take that down. So they had to take it down. But I thought that was funny. Like, that's, I love that. That's it's awesome. Who decided to do that? Like, who decides to do that? Who gets the right to put a free throw clock up on the backboard?
I don't know.
It's so awesome.
The graphics department or whatever. This, again, is a dumb NBA rule, or at least it's dumb that it is enforced sparingly. This was a story last week when the Bucks were playing Miami and Giannis got called for this, and I don't remember what the punishment is, like you lose that free throw or something because you took more than 10 seconds. Giannis has been doing this all year, probably his whole career. He continued to do it throughout the Miami series, and he's continued to do it in the Brooklyn series, and it's not been called since. So it's just a dumb thing that they just call it that one time and then they don't enforce it anytime else. He's not the only player in the league who takes a long time on his free throws either. So either enforce it every single time or get rid of the rule because it's stupid. I don't like the Nets, so I, you know, to me, it's like, that's disrespectful. Don't do that. But, like, if it was the Lakers, smiling. I'd be like, yeah, hell yeah. Get them.
So, you are smiling as you're thinking about it, though.
Yes, it is funny. And the last piece of NBA news is LeBron is switching from 23 back to 6, which was his Miami number. So maybe they're...
has been in the works.
This has been in the works, although it sounds like Anthony Davis is sticking with number 3 and not changing to 23.
Oh.
The reason that this is happening is because in Space Jam, apparently LeBron wears 6.
Ah.
So it's more of a marketing kind of thing.
Wow. That's very important then.
I know all we talk about on this podcast is LeBron, but like, I don't think he's ever spoken publicly about where the significance of the number 6 comes from, because that's the number he wears in practice. That's what he wore on the national team. That's what he wore in Miami. So clearly 23 and 6 means something to him. 23 is a, you know, everybody since Michael Jordan has wanted to wear 23. So that's just that kind of thing. But if you're removing yourself from that and saying, I'm not Michael Jordan, maybe I'm better than Michael Jordan or whatever, the number to choose is not six, because that's the other number that is very highly associated with Michael Jordan. So I don't know, but we'll move on.
Also, LeBron just dropped the full Space Jam trailer.
I saw that today. Oh. Yes. Yes.
Looks very good.
So good. I am so excited. Oh, it's going to be so good. I'm going to the midnight premiere.
Did you watch the In the Heights trailer?
I did watch the In the Heights trailer.
Not trailer, like the first 8 minutes of the movie, not the trailer.
No.
The first 8 minutes.
Oh my God, it's so good. No, I don't want to watch that until I just want to see the full thing. I've seen the couple of trailers and stuff, but.
It is so, so, so good. Dad won't watch it either, but Dad and I are going on Saturday with our friends to see it.
Yes, I'm very excited for that as well. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on to the WNBA. Commissioner's Cup,
I just wanted to bring up some standings for it. So we had some multiple teams kind of in the running, but right now in the East, the Sun is dominating, and in the West, the Storm is dominating. They 4-0 and 5-0, so nobody's even close.
So we could have them in the Commissioner's Cup, and then we could have them again in the finals. So we'll see. All right, then we also had the Storm and the Wings played twice in three nights earlier this week. Mm-hmm. And in the first game, Jewel Lloyd of the Storm hit a crazy three-point buzzer beater game winner. Storm win the game. In the second game, Arike Ogunbowale hits a crazy, not quite buzzer beater, but game-winning three-point shot, wins them the game. Mm-hmm. So it's just two nights and three games, same teams going at it, back and forth, came down to the last second, two huge shots by two amazing players. It's just very exciting.
Great.
Look them both up.
That's great.
All right. And then the power rankings, sort of similar to what you were just talking about, but the Aces, Sun, and Storm all sit on top from the latest ESPN power rankings that I saw. No surprise there. The Sky, which we both picked to do very well this year, they've been without Candace Parker for much of the year. So they've been struggling.
I think she played one game.
Yeah, I think that's right. Mm-hmm. Again, with such a short season, like this, you know, this could derail their whole season. Like, it's not like, oh, she's been out for a couple weeks. All right, she'll come back and they'll get back on track. Like, we've played a good chunk of the season already. So we'll see. The Liberty have unfortunately come back to earth a little bit. They've lost their last three. So we'll see. They've played some tough opponents, so.
They're already doing twice as well as they did last year, so.
That's right. Yes. All right, MVP race. Jewel Lloyd, who I just mentioned, has been having a killer season. Mm. The Storm, who are known for an amazing player, Breonna Stewart, and a longtime vet, Sue Bird, their star this year has been Jewel Lloyd, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's been fantastic, obviously hitting game-winning shots. I think I saw she's averaging career highs in like every statistical category. And then Jonquel Jones of the Sun has also been off to a very hot start, but she is going overseas for the FIBA. Mm-hmm. And I forgot to write down which country. There's like two countries that she's representing. Bosnia maybe and something else.
Keep talking, I'll look it up.
She's going overseas for most of this month to compete in this like European basketball tournament. They call it Eurobasket. Mm-hmm. So the Sun are going to be without her, and she's been, like I said, playing at an MVP pace so far this year, so that's going to certainly take a toll, I would think, on their team. Real quick, as you're finishing that up, a couple other candidates. Bosnia? Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. A couple other candidates this year who could be in the running. Liz Cambage, Asia Wilson, both from the Aces. Mm-hmm. Benaija Laney, who's been incredible for the Liberty. And Tina Charles has been off to a crazy hot start with the Mystics as well.
Another former Lib,
that's true. Mm-hmm. So we'll see about that. Mm-hmm. And then you brought up a couple weeks ago, the James Wade and then the referee situation where the referee called him a derogatory term. the WNBA is very private about a lot of things. Like, we don't know a lot of players. We don't know how much they're being paid, punishments. We're not sure. We don't even know the official's name who was involved in this situation. Right. Mm-hmm. But apparently this official has not worked a game in about 11 days. Mm. And it wasn't announced like if this was a suspension or this was that person took a leave or something, but the general feeling is that there was some sort of suspension there for this person. But I think they just worked another game last night or something. So.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Sorry, I feel like I talked through most of news. Is there anything else from you?
There isn't, because you, I don't mean this like in a bad way, but like for the first time, you're the one who wrote most of the WNBA stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I read through it and I was like, oh, all right, he's got that covered. And I just added my little piece and then that was it.
So that's news. Mm-hmm. Let's get into our second segment of the day, which is our movie review of the documentary Once Brothers.
Once Brothers. Now, the last time we did a documentary, I don't think we rated it. I don't think we rated documentaries.
No, we did rate the More Than a Game, the LeBron high school one. What was that called? The like 3-hour one that was following those two kids.
Oh my God, that was so long.
Yeah, but we didn't. Hoop I know dreams. We didn't. Hoop Dreams. Yes, thank
Hoop
you.
Hoop Dreams, right?
Yes. Yeah, we didn't rate that one. So. Okay.
I know we're not up to talking about rating now, but I didn't write down a rating. So if we are rating this, I'm going to think about it while we talk. Uh-huh. But if we aren't, then cool that we're not rating documentaries. Awesome.
I didn't rate it either. So we can just,
okay. So we won't rate them then. That's fine.
Yeah. Did so what like was it? This?
Oh, you want to talk about what it's about?
Yeah, you go ahead with that.
Okay. So in the mid to late 80s, Yugoslavia was a country or a federation of countries that were called Yugoslavia, sort of. I'm not 100% familiar with all the history of it, but it visually to me looks like, you know, like a state has a bunch of counties within it. So that kind of thing, like it's a country of federation of other countries or something. So anyway, it was a united, country federation. And Vlade Divac and Dražen Petrović were young players who played on the Yugoslavian national team and were really good. And then as the years went on into the late 80s and maybe into the early 90s, Croatia, I believe, decided they wanted to... So communism was winding down in Europe and the USSR, and Croatia wanted independence from this Yugoslavian federation. And as communism broke down and as Croatia and another one of the federated countries decided they wanted their independence, a civil war began. And it was a violent, like neighbor against neighbor, people killing people turning people in, just really, really horrible civil war. And so Vlade Divac was Serbian and Dražen Petrović was Croatian. And those were the two at that. There was a lot that went into these wars. So to boil this down, those two were kind of on opposite sides, sort of, or people in those areas had different thoughts about how the country should move forward. And so there was violence from one to the other. And they were roommates when they were young, when they were on the Yugoslavian national team. And they got to a point in their life where they no longer spoke. Unfortunately, Dražen Petrović died in a car accident when he was in his mid to late 20s, maybe 28, in the early 90s, I believe. 93-ish, maybe. And so now they would be in their 50s at this point. This movie actually was about 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago. But when this occurred, Vlade went back to his home in Serbia and also went to Croatia to kind of give us the whole backstory. How did I do? I said a lot of words there. Did I cover it all?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That was pretty much it. Yeah.
And I forgot to ask Dad. I think the other day when after Dad listened to our last episode when we said we were watching this, I think Dad said he saw Dražen Petrović play.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And which is, you know, people say Petrović was like one of the greats and would have mm-hmm. just kept getting better and better and better. So that's like a, you know, not a lot of people can say that they saw him play.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, that was the documentary. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty well done. I did see that after the fact, there were some people, specifically Croatians, who took some issue with some of the things in this movie and said that not everything was accurate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's hard to tell where that's coming from. And so, you know, I don't know what to do with that.
Well, yes, I read all of that information as well, but in this movie, Divac goes to visit the Petrović family. So he meets Dražen's mother. He may have met her before because, you know,
they played
on the team together, but goes to see her, and the brother is there. The brother is a professional basketball coach in Europe, or, you know, somewhere not, you know, not the NBA, but he's a professional coach. The brother, I think his name is Alexander Petrović. He later said, no, this is, you know, one thing that a lot of the Croatian friends of Dražen had to say was that Dražen was not as close to Vlade as Vlade would like you to believe based on this documentary. Like, they were on the same team. They weren't really good friends. You know, I was his best friend. He wasn't, you know, that kind of thing. But Alexander says, yes, my brother was very good friends with him. He said, was he his best friend? You know, no, other people were his best friend, but they roomed together for like 5 years on the national team when they'd go to training and go to games and things. Like, they were really good friends for a while. Mm-hmm. So, there's many layers to this story.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. And I actually, uncharacteristically for me, cried a little bit.
Oh, uh-huh.
Towards the end when Vlade was meeting with Dražen's family.
Mm-hmm.
I did. When they showed they showed footage from the crash.
Yeah.
They showed responders working on, you know, you could see legs, but assume that it was him. And they showed footage from the funeral, and that, and the anguish on everybody was just, it was so sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was framed very nicely of this, you know, setting up this whole story and seeing them coming together and all the success and the friendship and joy that they had together. And then how this, you know, world event and very, you know, obviously close to their hearts sort of tore them apart. And then obviously wasn't able to make up for any of that heartbreak or, mm-hmm. but, you know, a way to have some sort of closure at the end in Vlade going and meeting with his family. And I'm not, you know, who knows if that was the only time they communicated since then, mm-hmm. whatever, but it was a nice sort of bow on that. And it's just
I really enjoyed Vlade also. I thought he had a great personality. I really enjoyed him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it was just so fascinating to think, like, with when they started talking about the Civil War and all of the violence that was going on and all the things that you described. And then, you know, it cut back to like Vlade playing with the Lakers. It was just like a crazy juxtaposition to think of like what these guys must have been dealing with emotionally and just thinking about their families and friends back home while they're like mm-hmm. playing this, you know, fun game over in America where probably not much mind was paid to any of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me, it's come up a few times about Enes Kanter and what he must be dealing with all the time, every day as he's playing is, you know, obviously he's doing what he needs to do to help himself and support his family. And there's obviously a little bit of a different situation there because he's sort of has to be over here in America to keep himself safe.
Right.
But he's talked about that his family over in Turkey is, you know, subject to violence and potentially being arrested. And so,
and I can't, you know, you realize very often you realize your, you know, American privilege, but one thing as a mom, when they're interviewing Vlade's parents who live in a small apartment in Serbia, you know, there was a lot of snow when he went back to visit, but, you know, buildings with graffiti on them, you know, kind of a sparse area. The apartment was kind of sparse. So, you know, it's not like they live in luxury there. And they were talking about how, oh yeah, when he was on the Lakers, they kept up with how he was doing by reading the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've been to nearly every show you've ever been in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you had your a cappella shows and I couldn't be there, one time we were driving to your college to visit you. And during that time, you were in an a cappella show and we had our phone up in the car, you know, wherever we could get Wi-Fi so that we could watch and listen to you while we were driving there. Mm-hmm. So to think that, you know, that's so privileged for me to be able to do that. For a family to only find out how their kid is doing in an extremely successful field just mm-hmm. by reading the newspaper. It's a little mind blowing to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same thing that you kind of mentioned earlier, just the whole idea about giving people their flowers as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, Petrovic obviously didn't have the longevity or the accolades of a Kobe Bryant or a LeBron James, as we talked about last week, but I don't know. This is like a little bit of this reminded me of Kobe and Shaq, because they've had a public falling out. They were on the Lakers together in the early 2000s, and they had a very public breakup and didn't speak to each other for many years. And they sort of made up a little bit closer to the end, but not totally. And then obviously, you know, Kobe was gone. But it's hard for me to compare that, because I think many people watching this or who have heard this story in the past, the takeaway for them might be like, you have to make up with people. You have to, you know, you have to mend those bonds and whatever. And I don't think it's that simple in this situation. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it's not necessarily possible nor the right thing to do. Like mentioned, like Vlade believes that all those guys, including Dražen, know that he's a good guy and know that he's not like a villain in this situation. But if they publicly came out and said, that's my friend, or I support him or whatever, that could mean literal violence for themselves and their families.
Yes.
So it's not always such an easy thing to do, nor is it the right thing to do for where you are in your life.
I mean, I think that's true of anything. I'm sure you can think of people you've been friends with in your life who you've had falling out with, who, why would you make up with that person? You know, just because these people are public figures. So when you talk about, you know, Shaq and Kobe, like, oh, they're basketball players, you know, they haven't made up, but maybe they should. Well, you know what? What if one of them's really a big jerk and the other one just doesn't want to be any part of it? So, you know, I get that, you know, people often say that kind of thing about families as well. Oh, that's your parents. You have to love and honor them. They're your parents. But, you know, there are parents out there who do a lot of shitty things. So I don't think that's always the case. So I don't know.
I mean, in this specific situation, like, do I think both Kobe and Shaq were probably assholes to each other? Yes, I'm mm-hmm. sure. But their feud was about, like, you didn't pass me the ball enough, or like, this is my team, this is my team. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that
Civil War.
Right. So I'm not saying they have to be friends or they have to stay in each other's lives, but you can tell the sadness that Shaq has that they never really got closure on that. Mm-hmm. Shaq always thought that, you know what, someday we'll sit down and we'll be able to talk about this and figure this out. And, you know, maybe we won't be in each other's lives, but we can at least know we're ending this on good terms and we know where we will stand. And Shaq has talked about his sadness that he was never able to do that and his regret that he was never able to do that. And you know, it depends, you know, about an abusive relationship or what, but like, sure, I have friends that like I had falling outs with or didn't always agree with and we didn't have a fun end, but I do think that we should try to at least come to closure with that, where this is like, lives were literally in danger. So I can't blame anybody for not. You know, and Vlade, it looks like, from this documentary, it seems like Vlade probably tried more so than Drazen did. Mm-hmm. But I can't blame either side for doing what they ended up doing.
Yeah. And even from early on in this documentary, even from his Drazen's mother's description of him, that all he wanted to do was play basketball. There was nothing else that he wanted to do. And Vlade and the other teammates all said, he didn't know anything about what was going on in the world, like pop culture. He didn't mm-hmm. know anything about having fun and, you know, hanging out with your friends because he had the keys to the gym and would go to the gym by himself at 6 a.m. and practice basketball. So he was like very single-minded about basketball. So that might just be how he is. I mean, we have discussed many times how you are a rule follower. You enjoy rules. So sometimes people who are kind of structured in their thinking might not be able to open up and, you know, accept all or view all of the layers. I'm not saying you can't do that, but I'm saying, like, you know, as a rule follower, you know, that there are some things that people do that might not be forgivable to you if they're breaking the rules, even if you adore them. God forbid that, like, there was some huge scandal, a horrible scandal with LeBron, like your heart would be broken. But mm-hmm. if it was something that's an unforgivable thing to you, that would be it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where other people would be like, well, he's a really good basketball player. So, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that Drazen was a little more like that. Like, this is what's right. And this is what's wrong. And I've been wronged. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Danny Ainge was in this.
He was, yeah. We talked about him last week.
I never heard of him before last week. And he was kind of all over this because he was playing with the Trailblazers, I guess, and in the same position as Drazen. And Drazen's frustration when he went to the Trailblazers, like, he was the superstar in Yugoslavia, and he went to the Trailblazers, and he was 1 of 5. So he didn't get a lot of play time, and that really frustrated him. Mm-hmm. And everybody said he should have had more. Even his coach at the time was like, yeah, well, couldn't give him so much time. Like, why not? He's really good. Give him more time. So that's it. Mm-hmm.
I didn't really have a favorite and least favorite. I don't know if you did. Mm-mm. I don't know. Just feels weird to do that on a documentary, especially on this topic. One, yeah. But... Mm-hmm. And we're not rating it, so that's kind of it. But yeah.
I think it was only about an hour and 20 minutes long. And I think it was really a great vision into a very, like, a shallow vision, but a great vision into this civil war. And if you're a sports fan, if this might help you learn something about, you know, world history while you're at it, if you watch it. So,
yeah.
I
No, for me, it was like... It. I think it was one of the historians or journalists at some point said something like, this was the worst violence in Europe since World War II. And I was like, oh, this is something I like maybe sort of knew about. Like, if you said it, I'd be like, oh yeah. But like, so yeah, as somebody who is primarily a basketball fan coming into this, I did feel like I learned a lot.
There was, so I guess Vlade was about in his 40s. When this movie took place and when he went back to visit, and he had a documentary film crew following him around, and he was walking around Croatia. So he's a Serbian and he's walking around Croatia, and people are recognizing him, and not everyone favorably. And one guy, I guess, like kind of leaned into the microphone and he said, Divac Chetnik. And that sounded like a slur or something to me. So I was like, what does that mean? So I looked it up, and Chetnik is the name of the Serbian nationalistic military force in World War II that fought in a civil war against Yugoslavia at the time. So this happened in 2010 is when this movie came out. But this guy was likening, and he knew it was, I mean, you know, Vlade Divac is 7 foot tall and he is olive complected, which is more of a Serbian than a Croatian trait necessarily. So someone might recognize that, oh, this guy is a Serbian, but this person actually recognized who he was. Mm-hmm. So he knew it was Vlade Divac and used that. Yeah, I'm not going to say it was a slur, but like use this, like, you know, it was like if someone was like, oh, this person, Nazi, you know, mm-hmm. like that's a term from World War II. And now and this took place 5 to 7 years after that civil war was ended. And people in the square were voluntarily coming up with negative ways to describe this guy who's a basketball player.
I was actually
had nothing to do with any of the fighting.
I was actually surprised that it wasn't more so. I mean, maybe it was more so and they couldn't show everything. But like you said, like, you know, 7 feet tall people, when they walk past, your people are going to look anyway. Mm-hmm. And then knowing that, oh, yeah, there's this famous 7 foot tall person who was very publicly against, or, you know, not against, but like was this public figure that we could prop up as being like, that's the anti us. Mm-hmm. Less than 10 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, I was surprised that there wasn't more vitriol at his way. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
All right. So that's the movie review. We are moving on to our last segment of the day, a new game called Commissioner for a Day. So what this is again, not like themed. It's not like we're doing it this week for a reason, but we both just came up with a bunch of changes that we would make were we commissioner of the NBA or WNBA or both. I would guess mine are more like technical and gameplay stuff. Yours might be, I don't know, because I haven't seen your list, but we didn't pick a specific amount. I think we each have about 9 or 10, something like that. So we're just going to kind of alternate and just go through and talk about what we would do if we were commissioner for a day, the changes that we would make. You go first.
Okay. So are we going to like alternate? I'll do one, you'll do one, or I'm doing like all of my something?
We'll alternate if that's okay.
Okay. So I'm going to start with an MNBA.
Okay.
I'm going to, if I'm commissioner for the day, I am going to make 10-minute quarters in the MNBA. I think play is faster. Like for me, I know people complain about the WNBA and say, oh, women can't dunk, so that's not as exciting. But for me, there are some cool dunks, yes. However, I get really bored when it's like run, 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 dunk. Get the ball. Run, 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 dunk. I like a little more interaction, passing and things like that. So I think if we speed it up a little, it's less time, you know, you have to kind of do a little more technical stuff.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That was actually part of one of mine. So that's what I'll do next. But I absolutely agree. I think there would be less blowouts because there's less time for that to happen. And, it wouldn't affect stars' minutes, because they don't play all 48 minutes as of now anyway. They play less than 40, so they could mm-hmm. still play their same amount of minutes, and you would get a higher percentage of time, of game time, where the stars of the league are actually playing and they're not on the bench. So if your reasons and those two, I definitely agree. Along with that, I'm going to talk about the season length, which you may have as well, for both leagues. I think a basketball season should be about 60 games. So that would
How
mean...
How many is it?
The WNBA is 22 currently. The NBA is 82 currently.
Okay.
This year was 72. But I think 60 games is the best way to go. The NBA would never do this because they would lose too much revenue. Hopefully the WNBA can get up to 60 games because I think it would gain them revenue. But it would make games mean more because at this point, a lot of the regular season doesn't mean that much for the NBA. And there would be less injuries for the NBA as well because they're not trying to squeeze 82 games into this amount of time. They could have more time in between games, that sort of thing. So yeah, that's what I think. It would affect long-term records and records wouldn't be broken, but you know, I think for a better product, it's probably worth it. So that's my first one. Okay, back to you.
So in the WNBA, I'm going to alternate here. In the WNBA, I understand but don't like that they have that the women have to be older in order to be drafted than the men have to be. I resent that. I get where they're going, but it feels patriarchal to me. It feels like the men, because we know that the NBA has financially supported the WNBA and a lot of the WNBA's rules and governing structure comes from the MNBA. But it feels just patriarchal to me for them to say, what it feels like to me is them saying, we need these ladies to get a college degree. Because, you know, they're not going to make that much money. So we need them to be able to do something when we leave here, which on the surface of it seems like a sensible thing to do. But when it's a rule and it's not a rule for the men, it just frustrates me that, oh, we have to take care of our little women, make sure that they're taken care of. You know, I don't like it. So I don't know whether I would make the women younger or the men older. But I would equalize that.
Okay, great. Let's see. What do I want to do next? Okay, for both leagues, I would move the 3-point line back further. It's gotten to a point where everybody can shoot. Everybody can make threes in both leagues. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten to the point where corner threes, if you get an open corner three, that's pretty much a layup for most people. So I think it's gotten too easy. So I think we move the 3-point line back, make it a little harder to make threes, and then it'll also separate the true long range shooters from everybody else. The Steph Currys, the Dame Lillards, the Sammy Whitcombs of the world will be able to consistently hit that shot where everybody else will not. So that's another change I would make. Okay, you got it.
All right. In the WNBA, I increased salary cap and the team roster size. You know, we've talked about the salary cap a bajillion times, so I don't need to get any more. Anyone who's listening to us this far into our season knows how I feel about that. But the team roster size, you know, the Liberty, for example, the roster size is 12. You can have 12 players on the WNBA. So they currently have at least 3 people who are out on injuries right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves 9. If anyone's just briefly injured, that is even fewer. So if you have 9 and there are 5 on the floor at the same time, that doesn't even let you refresh everybody all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's what I do.
Cool. I like it. Okay. The playoffs. I would like the MNBA to do playoffs like the WNBA does it, where they take the WNBA currently takes the top 8 teams, regardless of conference, and they seed them just 1 through 8 based on their records, and 1 plays the 8, 2 plays the 7, all the way down, and they're reseeded after each playoff round. Currently, the 1 and 2 seeds in the WNBA get byes, but I would have the same amount of playoff teams the NBA have now, so 16, but the top 16 teams, regardless of conference, seeded 1 through 16, and, you know, reseeded after each round, go through. Because for like 20 straight years, the West has been better than the East. So the 8th seed in the East would be like a 12 seed in the West. So like the Lakers, surprise, surprise, I'm talking about them, like they would be like a 4 or 5 seed in the East. They would have a much easier time were they in the East. So I would do that. But the reseeding allows them, like if the Lakers won their first round series, they'd essentially just be a 2 seed. Because they beat the 2 seed, so then they just get the 2 seed path the rest of the way. they should always have to play a higher seeded team than them. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would do. In terms of playoffs, the WNBA, their first round series, it's not a series, it's just one game. We got to make these series, because like anything can happen in one game. The best team always wins a 7-game series. The best team does not always win one game. So right. We need to expand that. Right. Yeah.
All right. For the MNBA, I'm going to advocate for increased pay for the entertainers. So we know someone who was a dancer for a professional basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
And while we don't specifically know that person's specific salary, we know that it was insignificant. And I'm not saying that they should be making what, you know, Steph Curry is making. But this was a job that took up a lot of time to learn something like 30 dance routines
mm-hmm.
and to perform them. And to be ready to perform them and to very much live their lives in a healthy way so that they have the strength and the body to be able to do the dances they had to do. And I don't feel that their compensation was in line with what the league's compensation is. So I would like
and not
to-
just it's not just the, you know, the 41 home games. They have a lot of other things they have to do throughout the year. A lot of other yes. conflicts yes. and days that they need to block out of their schedules.
Right. So you can't have like a job and then also do this.
Right.
But if this is what you're doing, then your base pay is not commensurate with what you're being asked to do. And you are an employee of the same organization. Uh-huh. So they're not like, they're not freelancers. They're not someone who, you know, works for the New York City Board of performance or something like that, and then you know they're just kind of contracted for the game. Like they are employees to the extent, and I've read a lot about cheerleaders in the NFL and dancers in the NBA, that there are rules that they are not allowed to interact with the players because there could be workplace issues that go on if there's like fraternizing between the players and the entertainers. So, you know, you have rules like that, there should be some compensation. So
definitely.
That's where we are.
All right. I'm going to do my last like big picture one before I get into like on court things that I would change. The last thing is I want to de-incentivize tanking even further than what both leagues have already done. I think tanking is the worst thing that is in sports. The goal of sports is to win the game, and tanking does the opposite. So I'm not sure exactly how we would do that. Maybe the lower playoff seeds actually get the first couple picks in the draft. Mm-hmm. So there's incentive to make it to the playoffs so that you can uh-huh. try to get one of those draft picks. Or maybe we extend the lottery so that the bottom 8 teams all have the same odds at getting the number 1 pick, so that you could have the worst record and still end up with the 8th pick in the draft and not the first pick. I'm not maybe a combination of those things, but tanking is a disease that needs to be removed from any sports. So that's the biggest thing I think that I would do. Okay, you go ahead.
I looked through the rule books and I didn't see in the WNBA anything about a coach's challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So I might be wrong about this, but I like the idea of there being coaches' challenges. You know, coaches should be able to challenge, you know, not unlimited or whatever, but I may be wrong about it, but if there is not one in the WNBA, I would like for there to be, guidelines as to coaches' challenges.
Okay, great. I'll go my one that's kind of similar to that. We need to, whether it's a coach's challenge or just a referee review on a play, we need to speed that up so much.
Mm.
We're sitting here looking at angles and angles and angles in slow motion for 5 straight minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We got to speed that up. I've been saying this for years about the NFL and the NBA and the WNBA too. We just need a sky judge who just automatically has all the angles. They're up in the top of the arena. They have all the angles so that the second a close play happens, they can begin looking at it. And then they just send it down via mic. Okay, ref, you got this wrong or you got this right. It should take less than 30 seconds and then we move on. I'm all for getting the calls right. There are some older people that are like, referees making mistakes is part of the game. Like, no, we should make sure we're getting the call right. But doing that should not take 5 minutes out of our lives. We should just get the call and move on. So, right. Sky Judge.
All right. Well, I don't really know what this rule change is, but kind of along those lines, last year at the end of the Wubble season, the Liberty played the Aces. And there was a foul called. Is Asia Wilson on the Aces?
Yes.
Okay. So I think the foul was called on Asia Wilson. But then when she was doing whatever she did to get advantage because she had a foul called on her, she made a foul. So then the Liberty was, and it was the end of the game. So Liberty was able to do something, whatever it was, shoot or have a pass or whatever, have possession of the ball. While they were, then they huddled together. They came up with a plan. They did the move and they made the basket to win the game. But then the officials decided that the time clock was wrong. And that the amount of seconds they had were wrong and they had to do that play again. So they were in possession of the ball because a foul was called on someone to give them advantage by having the ball. They made a basket from it. They came up with an awesome play that got them that basket. But then now they have to run it again. But now the other team knows that play. So now you have to come up with another play or risk them being able to block the play. And in the end, and it happened three times in a row. This one play, they had to do it like three times in a row. And in the end, Liberty did not get the basket. And I feel like that was a disadvantage to them that, you know, they should have had the advantage there. And because someone else made an error with starting the time clock too soon or too late or whatever they did, why... In that case, can't you, like, we have it on film. Can't we watch the film, adjust the time clock to look at the film, and wherever the time clock ends, it ends. If they didn't shoot by then, they didn't. Or if they, you know, whatever it is, we have it. We have record of this happening. Can't we do something like that? So I don't know how that, I don't know what that means, but that one made me, that was like my, one of my earliest giant mounds of stress watching a basketball game.
So change that.
Whatever that is, change it.
Okay. My next one is going to be sort of along the same lines as the last two we've done, but another way to just speed up the game. There's just way too many lull times. So in the NBA, less timeouts for the teams. They currently get 7. In the WNBA, they get 4. I think that's more what it should be. For the whole game, maybe you get an extra one in the last couple of minutes if like you haven't used it or something. Like I don't know exactly what the rules would be, but like it feels like currently in the NBA, it feels like if the other team makes 2 baskets in a row, you call timeout and we all meet and re-talk about our defensive. Like basketball is great because it can go back and forth and back and forth and basket, miss. So. Like that should be the flow of the game that we're going for. So I think four makes sense. I think the WNBA probably has that right for timeouts.
You know, when I was looking up why there are 12-minute quarters, one of the documents that I saw said that it's because the having 12-minute quarters and the timeouts involved led to approximately a 2-hour game, and the people in charge felt that ticket buyers would feel it was worth it to buy a ticket to watch that length of a game. So I wonder if that's why there are that many timeouts as well, that it's, you know, just kind of like the play-in thing that makes more money, that play-in,
play-in tournament
tournament. Thank you. Makes more money. Like this is, those are business decisions. So maybe that timeout thing is a business decision too. Maybe. My next one is I would require all of the teams in the MNBA to develop a mission statement and tangible goals to increase diversity in their front office and management. So what is it that we're going to do? Tell me tangibly a goal that I will be able to look at the end of this time period and say, did we meet this goal or not? How we're going to increase diversity in management.
I think that's great. I think that makes a lot of sense. Okay. Currently in both leagues, you get each individual gets 6 fouls. Once you commit your sixth foul, then you're out. Mm-hmm. You're ejected from the game, essentially. You foul out. If the game goes into overtime, I say that everybody gets 2 more fouls that they can add to their thing. Mm-hmm. So like if you go into overtime with 5 fouls, you can now foul 3 more times before you are ejected.
Oh, and everyone gets it. It's not just the people who fouled out get 2 more chances. It's everybody.
Right, because the math was done so that you get 6 per 48 or 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then when we're playing 5 more minutes of overtime, why don't you get more foul leeway? Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then it also, you can do like in dodgeball, like a jailbreak kind of thing. So like mm-hmm. if Draymond Green fouls out with 6 minutes left in the game and the team is down, you can say, okay, if we can just get it to overtime, he's back in because he gets 2 more fouls, you know? Ooh. So like we can
make it more exciting.
Right. So it adds more excitement to the end. If somebody, you know, if your star player fouls out too early, you can say, all right, if we can just get it to overtime, we get them back and we can win this game. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be a lot of fun.
Okay. So that the MNBA has like minor league teams.
Like the G League. Yeah.
Right. WNBA doesn't have that. I'm sure because of finances, because they're not self-supporting as it is. So why add more to it? But if you had that, you would have people who are playing and developing and getting ready because of all these people who keep getting injured and you only have 12 spots on your roster. And yes, you can file a hardship waiver to get someone else if you don't have enough people, whatever. But then now you have a pool of people who are working towards what your, you know, ultimately, would it be great if each team had like a minor league team? Sure. But if there are a handful of them that they can have, there's a group that can be pulled from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And it goes along with the with your expanded roster roster spots mm-hmm. one that. Mm-hmm.
There has been outrage over the past few weeks of the people who've been waived from the WNBA teams who are amazing, mm-hmm. but just don't fit.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. All right. My last two are more technical stuff about fouls. The clear path foul. This is the one that drives me crazy. So currently a clear path foul is described as when there's a team that's in transition, they probably just got a steal and they are going and they're going to have a fast break and probably a clear path to the hoop and you foul them. To stop them from running, you get a worse punishment. So they get 2 free throws and that team gets back possession. So it ends up that mathematically it's worth it to just let them go and take the basket. However, the clear path is determined only if you're the last defender back, like if there's no other defenders that you have behind you. Mm-hmm. And if the ball is at a certain place on the court, can they call this? I think the clear path rule should be extended to include pretty much any time that a team is in transition, because that is the most exciting part about basketball, because you don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to alley-oop it? Are they going to lay up? Are they going to kick out to a 3? You don't know. We should be de-incentivizing fouling on a transition play to stop the game, because that we should try to let those go as much as possible. So we should expand the clear path rule to include any time that a team is running in transition. Okay.
I have one left.
Me too. Look at that. Perfect.
So my last one is that something that obviously would not be able to be enforced. And this is WNBA focused as well. So in the WNBA, many, if not all, most of the players play in international, European, Middle Eastern leagues in the offseason. Part of that is to, you know, as you said, the season is pretty short. The WNBA season is pretty short. So to continue to play for a longer period of time and also to make some money. And from what I hear, when they're playing in these other teams, they're making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Better than what they're making here at home. However, all of this playing, and then often the people playing internationally are coming back right as the season is starting or right after the season starts. So there's not like a training camp period to get people back into shape, you know, to get a whole team back into shape like that. So I think, and who knows how this would be enforceable, that a foreign league that wants a WNBA player on it should have to pay into some kind of insurance fund so that if that player gets injured in that foreign league while they're playing there, it's that insurance fund goes to pay their salary. So it's not included in the salary cap for a player who can't play for a whole season here because they tore their ACL when they were playing in Turkey or whatever. So it's a little convoluted, but that's my thought, is that the foreign leagues that want the American players, or the players who are even if they're not American, the WNBA players should have to pay into some kind of insurance fund so that it doesn't impact the salary and the team roster here in the States.
Wow. Okay. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
All right. So that was your last one?
That was it.
Okay. And then I just have one more. What I'm calling non-basketball moves. We're getting rid of all of them. Jump shooters who are trying to draw fouls and leaning into the defender rather than actually trying to make the shot. Out. That's a foul. Or it doesn't get called a foul ever. Even if you got fouled when you were trying to draw a foul. If you're not making a real basketball move to try to make a shot or make a pass, if you're just trying to draw a foul, you don't get it. Same thing on if the defender is trying to hold the player down who's trying to make a basket rather than trying to block their shot. They're just like physically just stopping them. That is fouled even more heavily. I'm not sure. Maybe they get three shots and possession, something like that. If you're not making a basketball move, same thing with drawing a charge. It's been a part of basketball for decades and decades. We're getting rid of charges. You can't just stand there and cover up your wee-wee and try to make the player knock you down. No, get up there, try to block the shot.
Uh-huh.
And if you foul them, you foul them. But no more trying to draw these charges.
Mm-hmm.
Out.
Wow.
Non-basketball moves, you're out.
Wow.
Okay. That's it. This is a long episode because we had a lot of ideas.
Oh my God, we really did. And we had lengthy descriptions of them.
We started early because I thought I was going to have a conflict, but I don't, so that's good. But we ended up ending at the same time we normally do anyway. Right. So
too bad about your conflict.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for episode 24. Send in questions, comments, movie thoughts, and guest suggestions to familycourtvision@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @FamCourtVision. And don't forget to subscribe or follow on Google Podcasts, Spotify, and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll see you next week on Family Court Vision,
the mother of all basketball podcasts.